Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Don't Feed the Animals. Have you ever noticed emotions, reactions, and tendencies just below the surface? It's like we have animals inside us, and if we feed them, they grow. So if we don't feed the animals, what do we feed? Here's Greg Meyer with some food for thought.
The other morning, I was at home working, which is where I work now, across the hall from where my wife was working, who works from home, which is where she works now, in my son's bedroom. And I was waiting for her to stop so we could go outside and have a cup of coffee. I was waiting for her because we said we'd stop and take a break, but she never takes breaks. She'll make food and I'll just sit in the kitchen uneaten while she waits for a stopping point, which never seems to come. So I was getting antsier and antsier and starting to get mad because I really wanted to stop for a minute and she just wouldn't do it. So I felt like I was being held captive to my work by her, and stuff like this was going through my head. This is her fault. She always does this. She never does what she says she's going to do. She isn't thinking about me at all. It's like I don't even exist. I don't think she recognizes anything outside of her own little bubble of work, as if what she was doing in these next 15 minutes is going to save the world or something. Suddenly, Chris was my enemy, not my life partner. And you know what? It felt really good. Sitting there at my desk, thinking unhelpful and far from true thoughts about her? Yeah, I liked it. You know what else? It was a natural and deadly chain of thoughts that I had to recover from and stuff down when she came out 5 minutes later and said, "Let's go get that cup of coffee." And does any of that sound familiar to you? I'm not suggesting the particular scenario, but do you find yourself feeling, thinking something, starting to react a certain way, and instead of checking it, doing something about it, you let it grow? You feed it, indulge it, and it gets big and ugly, and true or untrue, real or imagined, it becomes larger than life and true and real for you. Well, 2,000 years ago, Jesus was talking about this tendency within us, and it must have resonated with people because they heard it and kept after him to hear more. In fact, they even got it written down, which was not an easy or common thing to do back then. He talked about this tendency that we have in a number of ways, but let me share one that captures them all pretty well. So people had been watching the Pharisees. Those are their religious officials of the day, whom they thought they trusted and whom they turned to all these years for how to be lined up with God. But what they were noticing is that the Pharisees were all turning on Jesus. I mean, Jesus, the good guy, the one they saw bringing good and hope and deeper understanding to them. Why? The Pharisees would take a healing of Jesus and turn it into something that made him the bad guy. It didn't make sense. Now, seeing all this going on, Jesus could read between the lines, and he says something to them. Listen to these words of his. "The good person out of the good storeroom of the heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil storeroom produces evil. For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks." I don't know if you caught all that, but yeah, the people were thinking, that's what's going on. Some people look inside and they find the good and they make more of it. Others do the opposite. But that word evil is in there. And if you look up this verse, you're probably going to find the word evil in the translation that you're reading, maybe the word bad. And that didn't sit very well with me as I was reading this story. In fact, it never has. You know, breaking people into good and evil or bad is part of the problem, isn't it? So I look closer. And in the Greek, the word isn't the usual one for evil, which is kakos, but paneros, which does not actually refer to bad or evil, even though it gets translated that way. But it really derives from the words for pain or hurt or toil. Listen again. This is the Greek Standard Version translation of the verse. "Good people reach into the good storeroom inside themselves and bring out good stuff. Hurting people reach into the hurting storeroom within them and pull out hurt and pain." That's what the people of Jesus' day heard and resonated with. Not that there are good and bad people. That wasn't a new idea. People have been slinging that mud around for a long, long time. But that there are whole people and hurting people, that made sense. And it isn't just people. It's parts of each of us. We each have both storerooms inside us. And throughout life, we learn which ones to reach into. And somehow, somewhere within us, we decide which one we will release the contents of out into the world. We are starting the fall talking about something called Don't Feed the Animals. This is about understanding where our actions, our attitudes and behaviors come from, and what the emotions, reactions, and inclinations behind them mean, and what their place really is. You see, we all have these critters, these animals inside us. They are natural. Most of them have good purposes. They make us ask questions, use our discretion, wonder about, and like or dislike things. Noticing, like in my example before, that Chris repeatedly misses breaks and stopping points from her work, and that means something to me, that's fine. Even noticing that I don't like it, that it is inconvenient for me, that's fine. But when I look into the storehouse of my inner self and pull those noticings, those feelings, and those emotions out, the question is, what will I do with them? When you walk by someone's house and you see a lawn sign that you perceive as representing a political or social stand that you don't share, it's natural to look past it into the house and wonder about the person inside. But when emotions and reactions rise up from that curiosity, what do you do with them? That's what we're talking about. You see, these animals that live inside us, they have a place and a role. Anger, judgment, fear, envy, self-protection. There are millions of them. They are sources of information for us. They are not sources of living. They can be on the bus. They should not be driving the bus. But we let them take over, and we do it by feeding them. We feed them, and they get stronger and bigger and fill our hearts, overshadowing the fragile, truly human pieces that belong there. You see, that's why this is all so important. It has to do with your heart and my heart. Jesus' last line was this: "For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks." You could just as well add that the hand acts or the mind thinks, because Jesus dealt with them all in the stories that follow. Our words and actions and thoughts, they come from the abundance of our hearts. That is, what we have filled the storeroom of our hearts with. That's what informs our lives. That's what others in the world experience from us. And this is why this was so important for Jesus, and why it should be for us too. It's not because this letting certain emotions or feelings run rampant is annoying, or even that they create real problems, but because they come from our hearts. And our hearts are who we are and who we are becoming. And when we feed the animals, when we've given free rein to forces that shouldn't be given it, it changes our heart and we become someone we shouldn't be. I think someone we don't want to be. This isn't just about being a nice person. This ties into our struggles for racial justice. It ties into our response to the pandemic. It ties into the climate crisis. It ties into who you are as a husband or a wife, a partner, a friend, brother or a sister, a worker, a citizen. It ties into each and every one of us being a fuller, more whole person. There are two different worlds available to us. One in which we pull from our better selves, our storeroom of good, rather than from whatever crops up in our emotions. Another one, we feed those initial reactions, emotions, and inclinations and let them grow and take over. The first world is one in which we still make mistakes and are far from perfect, but there is learning and growth and reconciliation and hope. The other is a spiral of hurt and pain that we all know all too well. Don't feed the animals. There's a bird that lives in our neighborhoods here in Minnesota, in fact, around a lot of the country. It's the brown-headed cowbird, typically just called a cowbird. Nice enough, pleasant song. The male has a black body with a brown head, surprise, surprise, about the size of a red-winged blackbird. The female's about the same size and is nicely camouflaged in tones of tan and brown. Just Google cowbird and cowbird babies and you'll see everything I'm talking about. And I'll attach a few pictures to the description of this podcast for you as well. Check them out. Cowbirds have evolved a very interesting trait that you likely don't know about. They don't hatch their own eggs. They go to the nests of other birds and deposit their eggs in their nests. Cowbird eggs and babies are bigger than most other songbirds, so their eggs and babies stand out. Birds in general aren't too smart, so they don't catch on that this one huge speckled egg doesn't belong there, and they hatch them all. And then they have to feed them all. It gets kind of ugly. I mean, the cowbird grows quickly and gets bigger than its fellow nestmates. It not only hogs the food its adopted parents bring, its size often ends up nudging the other babies right out of the nest until the parents are working 24/7, killing themselves to feed this oversized baby that they don't realize wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. That's what made me think of this as a perfect analogy of what we're talking about. I was in our backyard seeing this happen. A petite adult chipping sparrow was in our lilac feeding a baby cowbird that was three times its size and doing that helpless little baby bird thing, you know, head up, mouth open, wings fluttering. And I was working on these messages and I was thinking, wow, this is it. This is exactly what happens in us. You know, we think that chipping sparrow was nuts for not recognizing that the hulking cowbird isn't its own. But we don't seem to realize it either. We let things that have no place in our hearts, that are antithetical to our humanity, that are killing us and what we love, we let them grow up within us, and we not only let them grow, we feed them. When jealousy flaps its wings and opens its mouth wide, I go for it. I focus on why I am more deserving to get the break, have the thing that they have and I don't. I'm more deserving than that person. And when something bad happens to that person, I indulge it, and I'm secretly, sometimes not so secretly, I'm secretly pleased at their misfortune. And the animal that I raised, called them, shoves the hatchlings of empathy and concern right out of the nest. Now, don't be too tough on cowbirds for this, okay? Evolution worked it out, not them. And as despicable as it appears, cowbirds haven't wiped out other species. They just got themselves out of child rearing and praying for college. I mean, can you blame them? But it isn't working so well for us. We're killing ourselves, each other. We're tearing our world apart by feeding the animals within. The feelings, the reactions, the tendencies that rise up so easily and letting them take the wheel of our lives. The Hebrew people of the Old Testament, who had myriad generations to reflect on what it meant to be a people on a journey together, said something that connects with this and is both a little frightening and makes a lot of sense in this context. What they said, quite often, was a warning that our sins, that is, our brokenness and our separation from God and from one another, our unweaving from the fabric of existence, will be, and this is the quote, visited upon us into the third and fourth generation. The animals we raise inside us don't die with us. We pass them on to our children and others. Folks, that's not a threat. That's a heads up. What we do matters. Whether the things inside us that we give life to and that we bring forth to the world came from our storeroom of good or of hurt and pain makes a difference. And not just to us. Not just to those around us, but to our children and our children's children and to their children and so on. The truth is that the animal that you feed that creates pain, misunderstanding, distrust, dysfunction in your relationships may have been fed long before you knew to choose. Your parents who grew up with conditional love from their parents intended better, but did the same to you. And now you battle with the fact that you give mixed messages of love and acceptance to your own children. The damage of addiction by someone in your family left a well-worn trail inside you, maybe towards addiction yourself, maybe towards codependence, maybe resentment or anger. Society's message that black men are dangerous, that women are supposed to be sexy, not successful, that men are supposed to be competent, not sensitive, that started feeding animals inside you and made them big and strong long before you knew there was anything else to feed. That sounds really dismal, doesn't it? What a great note to leave you on. So, good luck. We'll see you next week. Yeah, don't worry. I'm not going to leave you there. Because while that is all true, and we need to know and acknowledge it, it isn't the end of the story. There is something that you can do. Don't feed the animals. Now, I said not feeding the animals is something you can do. I didn't say it was easy. That's why we're going to talk about this for the next 4 weeks, taking a look at four of the animals that give all of us a lot of trouble. But before we get into those, I want to point out two aspects of this discussion that I believe are important to understand. First, one of the reasons that we feed the animals instead of the pieces of our heart that give life is that it seems easier. Partly because of what I just said. It already began before we chose it, so it is what we know. But it's also easier because scratching the itch of these critters, listening and following these emotions and reactions and tendencies that pop up within us, seems like such an obvious thing to do. Dealing with the emotion and figuring out where it is pointing, that's a lot harder. So if something happens that makes me angry, why not just hit someone? If someone I look up to makes me feel sad, why not just believe that there's something wrong with me? Dealing with that anger, understanding what it is telling me and figuring out what to do with it, or putting my hurt feelings into perspective and considering where my self-worth really comes from, that's complicated. I don't just know how to do it. I'd have to learn and practice. So here's the deal. And I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but the parts of life that are most often true are not the easy things, but the complex ones. Why? Because we are complex beings. You know, right after that saying of Jesus that I mentioned, he goes on with a story of a person who built his house on a foundation of rock and one who built his house on a foundation of sand. The one built on rock withstood storms and floods. The one on sand washed away. Now, he's talking about how much it matters what we build our lives on, what we let grow in our lives. But notice the detail of the analogy. The house that stands, the life that reaches into its heart and brings forth good, is the one built on rock. It's harder to build on rock. Imagine the difficulty of drilling and leveling the site. There was an article in the Star Tribune last week about the fact that it's often much more expensive to build in Duluth than it is in the Twin Cities because of the geology of the area. They are building on the Laurentian Shield of granite, not the sod of the prairie or soil of the forest that you're going to find around the Twin Cities. The message? Yeah, it's harder. But we know that already, don't we? We always want others to see us that way. We want others to see us with nuance and understanding as the complex and surprising people that we are. We don't want to be the victims of a single story. But other people and other challenges? What's a quick fix I can apply to them? How can I summarize and conveniently categorize them so that I can deal with them without making it so complicated? And while we think we'd all like a less complicated world, come on, really? You know that would be boring. That's the life of a mayfly. You know, fish flies, those insects that appear by the millions by the lake each summer, they have no mouth parts. Did you know this? They have no mouth parts or usable digestive systems in their adult form because they're only going to live about 6 hours. Some types only live about 5 minutes. And their only task is to mate. And they don't need a mouth or a digestive system to do that. That's easy. That's complicated. You want that? Beauty, wonder, love, accomplishment, hope, relationship, that stuff you need a mouth and a digestive tract for, and all the complexity of a human being. Okay, that's the first thing. I'm not going to pretend this is easy. We're going to deal with the messy and the complex during this time of looking at these animals that we want to learn how to not feed. Now, here's the second thing I want to mention. None of this is about doing what you are supposed to do. It isn't about pleasing God or being a good person or pleasing anybody else so that you'll stay out of trouble or be rewarded. Don't try to keep the animals in check and feed the good stuff because you are supposed to. Do it because it actually works. It makes sense. It's how things are meant to be. Let me be clear. I don't know how you understand God. But if you see God as a being somewhere who sets rules and either sends us Snicker bars or smacks us alongside the head, depending on whether we follow the rules or not, then you need to think again. Neither you or I have any way of making God happy or of pleasing God. Whatever God is, God is God, and that includes not depending on you to make God's day. And if you got in God's way by breaking the rules, well, If God is some all-powerful doer of whatever God wants, then God could just fix things and make you do whatever you're told. It doesn't work that way. The truth about the world is too deep, too broad, and too high to ever fully fathom. But it is woven together with beauty and integrity. It is a whole. You and I are woven into that as well. What makes your life, what weaves us more fully into the fabric, are the parts of our hearts that are part of the fabric everywhere else. The rest, all those animals within us, they have purposes, they've got places too. They're sources of information for us, but information about how and why we would reach into our storerooms of life, not of hurt and pain. Okay, that's a lot. You've got animals, some big, some small, so do I. We all do. Life isn't about getting rid of them all. It is about discovering the many ways that they speak to us and learning how to listen to without taking directions from what they tell us. And instead, turning to the parts of our hearts that bring forth goodness, life, hope, love, understanding, and beauty. Learning to feed that instead. What I'd ask you is this. What are some animals in the nest of your life that are crowding out what could be there? What are those animals telling you? And if that's not challenging enough and you're looking for more, consider what is being crowded out by those animals. Don't worry about fixing everything you discover. This is lifetime stuff. Quieting yourself so that you can see the animals for what they are and beginning to understand them, that's probably what you first need to do in order to stop feeding them. Don't feed the animals. It's all about letting the abundance of your heart find its way to the words of your mouth, the actions of your hand, the thoughts of your mind.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend. And you can find resources for discussions and other notes about this episode at our website, fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out to us on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.